Well, hello and welcome everyone to the second episode. We actually made it back for another episode of MTG Potpourri. If you don't know what that means, go look up a Wikipedia page about Jeopardy and it'll make sense almost immediately. But joining me...
make sense, but...
What? Go back to your play. I know you're only paying half attention. I can't believe this is the one time you decided to pay attention while you're doing your play testing.
I'm saying is I understand what it means, but most of our viewers and listeners do not.
I mean, because Jeopardy's, do you guys think, let me introduce before I go my Jeopardy rant. And we also joining us, obviously you just heard Conley Woods, he's going to talk about the GPs, and also Adam Siborski.
Hi, everybody.
So do you guys think, you know, Price is Right, when Bob Barker retired, obviously they brought in Drew Carey. Do you think that when Alex Trebek, I don't know, dies, goes into stasis, gets frozen, do you think that they're going to get somebody new, or is that just the end of Jeopardy?
Well, they'll 100% get somebody new.
Who in your mind? To me, Ben Stein, I think, would be amazing as the Jeopardy guy.
He's too old. I think, who's the guy that filled in on The Daily Show for like 2 months or whatever?
British, John.
Craig Kilborn.
No, it was John. What's his name? What's his last name? I don't know. I'll remember by the end of this. I'll look him up, actually. He's a correspondent on The Daily Show. He's British.
So, for you, you thought Ben Stein is too old. Like, what age group, what age do you think would be the guy? Because Alex Trebek has always looked like, he feels like he hasn't aged in about 20 years.
Yeah. I don't know a specific age. I mean, it's not my forte. I would assume somebody who's probably, you know, maybe early 40s, somebody whose career is kind of at a cap point, but is very on point, very poised, has very good delivery.
Because, you know, he's doing Family Feud. He could do Jeopardy as well.
I think Steve Harvey is fine on Family Feud. I don't think he's the Jeopardy guy. I think you want somebody who can pull off the very serious, stoic delivery, even in the face of all of the crazy, funny things the contestants do and try to do.
Like Donkey
I think
Kong.
That's why I see somebody like, that can pull off like a Daily Show delivery. Somebody like that. Somebody with a comedy but serious background. Like all the late night hosts now come from comedy because they can hold their laughter. They can handle the crazy antics but still maintain that straight guy delivery.
Oh, what about Alan Rickman?
Alan Rickman? You go back to no.
He would be amazing to hear him.
The last thing he did was that Pictionary. Have you seen that Pictionary game show that he did?
No, I did not. I will though.
It's legitimately bad.
Is it the comedy bit about anyway. Alan Rickman leaving voicemails or Alan Rickman is absolutely hilarious if you haven't heard that. Well, guys, this is actually a show about Magic the Gathering.
The correspondent, by the way, the correspondent is John Oliver. That was his name.
John Oliver.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, that's who we're looking for. Anyway, we are a podcast about Magic the Gathering, sadly.
Yes, so we are going to rein it back in.
This first 5 minutes has not been
we're not even to the show, guys, right? I have a research article that I wanted to review with both of you because I think it's pretty groundbreaking. So we'll be going through that at the end of the show. But Adam, we were actually talking a little bit just before we hit the record button that Tom was getting confused about Commander bannings. And that's because in some ways it sounds like there's two different communities, and I want you to roll with that.
Right. So, you know, I think when most people that are familiar with Magic think of Commander, they think of the wacky, angled, singleton, multiplayer, big deck format that have pre-constructed decks that have, you know, a dedicated article on almost every Magic website, including the Daily MTG, the mothership itself. Small plug for myself, but there's apparently also a community, and I'm not very familiar with this community, and I haven't really paid attention. As far as I understand, it kind of started in France. There was a bunch of French players, and basically they, like any format, you can have competitive play within it. I mean, anything where you have a bunch of rules defining what a deck means, you can min-max around those rules to create the most powerful decks that you can. And compete against each other if you wish. Commander specifically avoids that. You know, they don't have sanctioned events in the sense of tournaments or things like that. Although you see events at side, you know, side events at GPs and stuff like that. And I could talk about that some other time, but, you know, apparently there is a dedicated one versus one dual based, so not multiplayer, but dual based commander format. And basically they focus on, you know, defeating your one opponent with your quasi legacy vintage singleton 100 card commander deck. And, they, you know, you caught one of the, I guess, one of the single player, the dual, you know, commander dual ban lists, which is going to be very different, obviously, from the very kind of laid back, high level ban list that the rules committee, the actual official commander website, mdgcommander.net, manages.
Yeah, so that might be a good thing if people are getting more into commander, is that it was nice to know sort of what would be the official place for me to go to. And they have a huge forum and everything else to learn more about the commander, I'd say, that most of us are familiar with.
Yeah, and MTG Commander is an excellent place to go just to focus on Commander. Like, if that's all you play, that's a great place to go talk and hang out. And you're going to talk to a lot of really great people and get a lot of feedback. And it's definitely focused. It's kind of like, you know, if you're into Legacy, I think Source, MTG Source, you know, there's like a Legacy dedicated community. It's very insular and dedicated to the format. That's how MTGCommander.net is.
Okay.
Excuse me, I just wanted to specify it's MTG The Source for anybody that's interested in that particular website that he's referring to.
MTGTheSource.com. So it looks like it's kind of just a huge forum, it looks like. Huh. I've never heard of this one before.
Yeah, it is a forum very much in the style of the Mana Drain, which was popular for Vintage. The Source is basically the legacy version of that. I believe the Source is still independently owned right now, whereas the Mana Drain was scooped up by Star City Games a couple years back. But yeah, you're obviously going to be best to get your sources, no pun intended, from multiple areas when it comes to Legacy. I wouldn't rely on this particular forum for all of your information because it could be a little kind of one-sided, if you will. But it's still a great resource with a ton of people that care about the format writing there. So.
And so, and Adam, you had mentioned before, you said like the bannings for Commander would come out with the other banned and restricted list being updated. And when would that be for people to keep an eye out for?
I think it's what, next Tuesday?
Next Monday.
Yeah, it's typically the Monday before a set release. So they basically tie the new set comes out along with any bannings, and it all affects the format when it comes online that Friday. So like Mortal of the Gods is legal. Any ban changes to Standard or Legacy or whatever are in effect, and everything's a seamless rules change all at once. And then MTGO usually picks it up like within like a week or three.
Yeah, and I guess we started this podcast sort of after the whole just blowback with the changes to MTGO, with getting rid of a lot of the, I wouldn't want to call them the events, have largely been, you know, do you guys play a lot of MTGO to see if has there been a huge drop off in players there? Has it seemed to have weathered these changes okay?
Oh, no. The player base is basically the same. Remember, the Magic Online is mostly for the hardcore Magic players. You do not see a ton of casual players on it, which is one of the problems with Magic Online. It is not Duels of the Planeswalkers. It is not friendly to new players or casual players or anything like
that. No, it's not. You will get verbally assaulted. I'm raising my hand. That's why I will never play it again.
Basically, the people that do frequent Magic Online do so because of the exclusive formats there, like Pauper or, I guess, their version of Vintage. It's called Classic, I believe, on Magic Online. Then there's, like, you know, you can play Commander on there. Those things are all fun. And then you have, like, the random formats, Momir, Vig, Joria, all that. So you have that kind of casual crowd that frequents Modo. And then besides that, you basically have hardcore tournament goers that are looking to draft and have, you know, whatever type of tournament experience at the you know, tip of their fingertips or whatever at a moment's notice. And that's kind of the two demographics that Magic Online appeals to. And one of the reasons it doesn't appeal to the large middle ground of Magic players is because it's not very, you know, good looking. It doesn't necessarily function as well as people would like. It's not very intuitive. The formats are quite restrictive. The number of cards on Magic Online frustrate some people due to them not being like moxes and things like that. I think they're looking to address a ton of these issues with things like you know, the Vintage Masters, I guess it is. I'm pretty sure it's called that. The Magic Online 3 announcement, you know, or I guess 3.0, whatever they're branding it at this point, the new Magic Online was supposed to kind of smooth out a lot of these things. And I think players were very quick to gripe about the fact that they weren't going to, that the new client was not going to fix all these things. And the old client was just getting way too bogged down. There was, you know, very important tournaments were being interrupted by downtimes and by crashes. And it was just very frustrating for people who would set aside an entire day of their lives to play in a tournament. They would get seven rounds in and then the tournament would crash and they would be told that, well, you know, you can join the tournament next week and we'll rehost it. And they're like, well, I don't have the ability to set aside another day of my life in a week. And it was kind of frustrating. So they basically said, let's stop doing these vital, gigantic, important tournaments on Magic Online for right now, because we clearly can't handle it. Because there was multiple weeks where like every event of this size, like of these, you know, multiple hundreds of players was crashing. It was not like an isolated incident. Every single event was crashing. So they said, let's just stop doing those things. They still have all the 8-player queues. They still have, you know, you can enter 8-mans and, you know, 4-0 dailies and all that stuff. All that stuff exists. It basically was just cut back down on, and you don't have Magic Online PTQs or anything like that going on right now. But I don't think that affects the like what normal Magic Online player base.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are like the tournaments they removed are almost like the perks for people that do play Magic Online. They're not like the thing that necessarily drew people into it in the first place.
Okay. Yeah. I guess you had brought up a good point about the Momir Vega, where I definitely have played quite a bit of that, but. Yeah, I would. Yeah, definitely could not recommend it for, you know, that more casual group. If you just want to play some fun standard, but you're not, like you said, sort of testing at a higher level tournament level, you're not probably not going to have a fun time.
Yeah, you lose out on a lot of like house rules that you can implement, or, you know, the pacing of play, for example, is a lot different on Magic Online than it is in real life. You don't get to just sit around and kind of be social and things like that. There's a lot of elements missing from Magic Online for the social crowd, so I totally understand why it's not like more popular than it is. But, you know, certain formats like Momir Vig and stuff are really fun. So,
yeah, every few months I go through this cycle of like really trying to give Magic Online, you know, put it through its paces, give it its a go, really try to like get into it. Kind of like when you like learn to drink like beer for the first time. You just keep trying until you seem to like it. And I just never seem to like really gel. Or
with you it. Wake up in a dumpster. I think
it's just because I'm, you know, the playing Commander is, you know, when you have infinite triggers and you're not, you know, you don't know the format, the interface inside and out, you don't know the correct shortcuts to hit to make all your triggers just stack automatically and things like that. It makes it very tedious and slow to play compared to in person. We know Commander games already go long, so you can imagine, you know, adding twice as much time with a digital interface and the inability to really converse freely with people and have that kind of like direct social contact. You know, it's a constant challenge, and I never really seem to find that the games, you know, feel successful or like I really overwhelmingly enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I mean, for you guys, like for, you know, for me and Adam too, like when you have kids, to me, like the idea of MTGO is just amazing. That, you know, kids are in bed, it's 9 o'clock at night, you have 20 free bits, you could just hop on and play a game. What would you want from a client to, I guess, to get to that middle, that be sort of said that huge crowd of people in the middle? Well, I mean, would it be having like built-in videos so you actually could have that interaction? What would you want to see in that to broaden that appeal of MTGO? Because obviously they're going to be doing a huge revamp at some point, I'm assuming.
Sure. I will let Adam touch on this a little bit more since I work for a digital game company. I don't want to give away too many internal secrets or anything like that we might be employing.
I was going to totally leave it alone this whole podcast, but you just said
If you look at other current popular TCG or CCG models like Hearthstone currently, I think they've already shored up a ton of things that Magic Online has failed to use to kind of catch that middle player base. For example, Hearthstone has the ability where you just mentioned, you know, I would love, you know, I love MTGO for the fact that I could sit down and play for 20 minutes. Well, realistically, what you just said is not actually true. You cannot actually just sit down and play Magic Online for 20 minutes. If you play like a 2-man queue, you can hope to be done in 20 minutes, but you still could go an hour or whatever. If you play a draft, you're definitely not done in 20 minutes. You are committed for any amount of time between 1 and 3 hours, let's say. So Magic Online kind of has this issue where you do have to set aside large blocks of time to play it. Even though it is significantly more accessible than paper Magic, it still requires a large chunk of your time. Whereas Hearthstone, if you want to play for 20 minutes, you can legitimately play for 20 minutes. You can legitimately play for 10 minutes if that's your thing. I don't think you could probably aim for much lower than that. But if you want to have a 10-minute session, that's something you could probably pull off in Hearthstone.
I've been in the beta for that for quite a while, and I agree. You definitely, it's pretty easy to hop in and play some, you know, quick games. And but exactly. I guess for you, Kelly, I would say for MTGO though, when I mentioned wanting to hop in for 5 minutes, I just want to play a couple of games. Like I'm not
I totally
or anything like that. Or
that's true. I totally understand where you're coming from. And if you're like, if you have a pre-built constructed deck or whatever, maybe you can do that. But let's say you want to play a couple games, you don't have a constructed deck, you have to build one. That's going to take a long time. Then you jump in a queue and it still might take a while. And if you want to play limited, then you have to go through some type of drafting or building process. So either way, it's going to still take you a long time. Hearthstone managed to kind of break all this stuff up. So you have like your, even if you're playing limited or what is the equivalent of limited in Hearthstone, you get to do all that at a separate time from your playing. You don't have to immediately jump into playing. You could draft your deck and then wait 4 days for all you care and then play your first match. So that's kind of cool. Magic in the current model that we know it can't necessarily fit into that type of a shell, I don't think. But I think that it could, Magic Online could become this place where there is the hardcore, that you're playing Magic for Magic style going on, but you also have that more casual Duels of the Planeswalker style of Magic, either through a campaign, let's say, or just through some other options for PvP mode or whatever, just something to where you have this more friendly user interface. And then those people that want to go into the back room and play poker for big money, let them go do it, like give them their option. But right now, when you go click the play button on Magic Online, a gigantic screen with infinite text and a million matches pops up. And
it looks like, you know, a spreadsheet from hell. You're just like, oh, God.
It's terrible. You cannot, as a new player, you cannot possibly stare at this screen and go, yes, this is what I want to be doing for
like, I'm going to go back to playing EVE on my life.
Exactly. So I think that like having a better interface in general would improve it. But yeah, go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
I was going to say, in defense of the Magic Online interface, whether it's version 4, the beta version, or version 3.5, where it's at now, if you've ever played EVE Online, the current and former, you know, the upcoming and the current interfaces beat EVE Online hands down. So it's not actual like spreadsheet hell. It resembles it, but it's actually significantly better than that. So for comparison, but
that's kind of, that's fair. Yeah. But at the same time, so many games have done it better these days that it's really better to, like, I don't know, just get your shit together. I think kind of like, there's just so many little stupid things that are wrong with the client that are just annoying. Those types of things we kind of learn to put up with, but just make your product look good. Like you want your product to be, look how popular streaming is these days. You want your product to be something you are proud when people are streaming it and showing it off what it looks like. You want it to look polished. You want it to look nice. And I don't think right now that people are super excited about people streaming Magic Online. Like that's one reason I think they're pushing for version 4 so much, is because it does look nicer. When we did the Community Cup event, they had to, use the version 4, and that was over a year ago. When they did the most recent Community Cup, they did version 4. When they did any of the like players championships type things for the mocks or anything, they use version 4. I think they're at least happy with the way version 4 looks and the way it presents to people. But version 3 and 3.5 or whatever are just so awful that I don't think that they're really happy that it's necessarily a game that's streamed or anything outside of it being, you know, Magic is good for Magic. But yeah, I think if they just improve things like the interface, improve small things that the community constantly bugs them about, they know about all these things. That's one reason that they are kind of pulling back and saying, all right, let's make these changes now. Let's kind of rip the Band-Aid off, because that's really what this pulling back on big tournaments is. It's them admitting that they have a problem and trying to fix it. So kudos to them on that. And I guess we really, you know, have to just wait and see if things go down as we want them to be.
Yeah. So are you done, Conley?
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all good. And I don't really have anything that disagrees with Conley. I'm going to come from a very different angle. Obviously I'm not, into playing a lot of competitive Magic. You know, I'm not quite as interested in, you know, the absolute best interface possible. I think it's great. The things that really hold me back from enjoying Magic Online as much as I'd like to are things that seem to be, you know, coming kind of like the standard package getting built into a lot of the modern games, which is like social leverage. Like if Skype was built right in and you could just pop up and have like a little like a social room where you're talking to the people in the game, and you can actually put a face to, Red Wizard 49494. I think that that would take a lot of the edge off of the chat only type interactions, and like for comparison, like Hearthstone goes in the complete opposite direction, which is like you can't even actually interact with
your opponent. You have canned responses.
You have like 9 canned responses, and like 99% of the time, you can just assume the opponent just auto squelches everyone. So like you have no way of actually interacting at all, which I think protects a lot of the players from bad interactions. But it doesn't let you have, like a social or a good interaction. That really turns me off. I don't understand why there isn't like better Facebook integration or Twitter integration where, there's these existing networks where like I just want to be able to ping my friends and say, hey, look, I'm in this game. Click on this link, have it boot up Magic Online to that game so I can just invite my friends straight to that game, straight to that Commander game. Instead of, even in the new interface, like searching for a particular game is tedious at best. It's very difficult to find that. And maybe just better search in the interfaces is what's needed. I don't know.
What you're saying sounds awesome, but I wonder if it's even like remotely on their radar. Like, I wonder if that's even something they, because there's just so many fundamental flaws right now, I think that.
I mean, this is total wish bag. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I would rather have a slightly clunky, unpolished interface, because I think that it's very easy to compare to something like League of Legends was built from the ground up as, a purely online multiplayer, competitive experience, Hearthstone, which is just, from Blizzard. So you just assume it has an infinite level of cutesy polish and detail, like I'm saying, even if I set that aside and say, look, I'm willing to accept, a lower quality interface compared to the best of the best in the industry, these are the features that really hold me back from using it.
In my mind, I almost wish there'd be like a separate product from Wizards for online play where I could almost give them money, where I could rent a what amounts to like a digital cart, a digital playroom. Like you go to your local carts or you have a table, I could buy one of those digitally, rent it from them, so I could either own cards in their system, I could somehow, with the new holograms on my new M15 cards, I could scan them in, something like that. And then, for $10 an hour, whatever it is, I can invite friends. You could have a limit of 8, 12 people. We could basically have a big online Commander game. We're seeing each other with video. We're just chatting. I don't have to worry about just being a dick parade because I'm only inviting people that I know. So there aren't going to be random people jumping in there. Do you guys ever think that would be something that would be interesting or useful? Or am I just coming from such a casual side that I am?
No, I mean, it just sounds like that should be a feature of Magic Online. Like basically Magic Online should have all of this stuff in it. It should be casual friendly. It should be like, you should be able to have, like, basically all you're saying is you want to have a way to kind of use your real cards online, I guess is what you're saying. That's the only kind of radical thing I would say out of that.
Yeah,
like they might not have that.
I was just trying to open it up to the, that more casual crowd where I think, especially if they're really coming from like, say Duels of the Planeswalker, I think it might be really confusing. It's like, what, I don't have any cards at all? Like, I think it would just be like, well, how, this doesn't make any sense to me.
Although a large factor there is the price barrier. Like Magic Online costs the exact same price as real life. And that, I think, is a huge barrier to what, like, a lot of people are unwilling to touch Magic Online because they view it as a waste. A lot of people are unwilling to try to garner a collection on Magic Online, so they only play Limited, for example. I did that for a very long time. It's, if Hearthstone's showing that they could do drafts for $2, and on $2 you could play for, weeks, not just the next 4 hours, Magic Online is still doing $12 drafts. Like, I can go to any live store in the state of Colorado and do a live draft tomorrow for less than $12. And that's still what I have to pay to play my digital draft that I don't get to keep the cards for or whatever. So, like, when things are that expensive, I can totally understand you not wanting to have a second collection or whatever for your commander to be able to play online. So that could be a big barrier for you, and you want to play with your real cards effectively. But if all of a sudden packs were $1, let's say, and I'm not saying that's reasonable, maybe, that's maybe too big of a jump. But if they were $1 and you were able to more readily kind of afford an online collection, and it wasn't as big of a burden to, like, support both an online and a real life collection, I think that you'd be, pretty happy with just a good interface with the ability to play with 8 of your friends. And I think that's something they could put in Magic Online. Whereas I don't know how realistic like a kind of card converter to digital object converter would be. But
or yeah. Also, or like in my mind, like I'm renting this digital room is, you know, say, hey, I'm paying 10, 20 bucks an hour, whatever it is, and we can split up with my friends. But hey, when I rent that room, there's a box of cards in there. Like the wizard saying, hey, while you're paying for this room, you don't take them with you. But while you're there, you have every set available, something like that, where you had some sort of like this temporary utopia of magic cards where you play for a few hours, make, you know, some incredibly crazy legacy modern decks, whatever it is that you're doing.
To effectively want to rent cards, kind of.
Yeah, on a very short-term basis. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to use them in, you know, limited events or tournaments or anything like that, but boy, it'd be fun to get, you know, seven people, eight people together and just play some crazy, crazy games from, you know, cards exploring the entire history of Magic.
Well, sure. That's called Cube, and user-created cubes that you could create a queue for and other users could join and draft your cube would be amazing, and I think that's something that we will probably see someday. You know, I can't imagine. I mean, that's one of the biggest draws of a cube. So, like, that happens in real life. It just doesn't exist on Magic Online yet. You only have the fixed cube that they provide.
It's a step. But, yeah, that was something where I was, when they talked about adding cube, I was really hoping that they would, you know, open it up. So, you know, hey, I have a friend that's really into this and they have an Atom Popper cube or whatever it is. And they have something really cool that I could hop on and play.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. But to jump back to Conley's point about, you know, that you can go to your local store and you can have a cheaper, almost better experience. I think that is by design. I mean, Wizards' core business model is the local retailer, and the online, you know, component. You know, I can imagine a world where if Magic was starting today, that it could start purely digital and it would be very similar to like a Soulforge or a Hearthstone type, you know, built for the digital experience, built with digital in mind, built with users all sitting at their home without ever having to venture out of their room to enjoy the game. But you know, that's not what Magic is. Magic is a retail driven experience with organized play and local store involvement, and everything is driven to the local retailer level. You know, it seems that's the core focus.
I agree with what you're saying, but I don't agree that that's the way it should be. I agree that.
Oh,
WotC has made a push to make it a local store thing, a brick and mortar thing. But as we moved into a new age, as we moved into the digital age, they need to rethink all that, because if you look at brick and mortar stores, they fail by the week. It feels like you basically have a few superstores kind of rise up and survive in every big location where Magic exists. Magic Online is able to appeal to a much larger audience worldwide, which is huge, because you don't have to worry about putting a brick and mortar store in some random place in Chile or whatever. They can just jump on Magic Online, and it's basically been proven at this point that the digital product will not hurt the paper product. If you look at something like League of Legends, that is a 100% digital game. There is zero physical aspects to it, and yet they sell out the Staples Center for people coming to watch people play. There are huge crowds of people that show up every week to the LCS, which is their league championship series, which is like their effectively their NBA season or whatever, the equivalent for League of Legends. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands, I should say, that show up to get signatures from the pros, even though they only get to see them for a split second, to watch these people play just sitting in front of them on computers, whatever. It's still exciting to them. There's still that social interaction. Like, just because the digital product could be really good and really flashy and look nice doesn't necessarily mean people are going to stop playing paper Magic for it. Like, paper Magic will always offer something different than digital Magic, which is that level of social, whatever, the traveling that is involved, the hanging out with your friends, the drinking a beer afterwards. Like, all that stuff is something that will always be exclusive to paper Magic. So what they should be doing is looking to embrace both simultaneously as unique and coexisting products, effectively. Like, they are two separate distinct things that should go hand in hand, and one should help the other, as opposed to either one worrying about, you know, saying it's by design might be 100% accurate that they get people to go to paper stores, but they need to stop. Like, Magic Online is effectively the way of the future. The world is becoming a digital one where you can get everything at your fingertips, and to not allow Magic to do the same is kind of naive on their part.
Well, it's actually incredibly well put. I It's hard, I guess. In some ways, you are kind of comparing apples and oranges with League of Legends, which is okay. I am incredibly ignorant about MOBAs. I'll be honest with you. I have not actually ever even played a game of League of Legends. Is League of Legends completely free to play, and you just pay for new characters, or what sort of the barrier to entry for League of Legends?
So it's 100% free to play for every functional thing. So there is no, you can never gain a functional advantage on somebody. Well, you can gain you can get to where you need to go faster by spending money, but that is not relevant to any particular game that you play. So the only thing, basically anything that is functional to how well you can do or won't do in a particular game of League of Legends, you can get for free. The only things you require to spend money on, should you want one, are things that increase like the way your character looks or sounds,
cosmetic,
Yeah, 100% cosmetic. Okay. They never ask you to spend money on anything that is functional for the game. Only things that are cosmetic.
Is there a way for Magic to somehow embrace, like you say, I mean, sort of the free to play has become the new model for games in a lot of ways. You know, how do you monetize? Because it opens up this huge market that people at least give it a try. Do you guys think, like, what would be a free to play Magic? Like, how, it seems like that's something they could do with digital. I mean, in some ways you get that when you join MTGO, you get a little, you know, starter collection to work with that you can't trade or anything, but.
I mean, to be honest, Magic probably doesn't ever want to do a true free-to-play. That's probably not something they're interested in, but they could certainly make it cheaper, especially when it comes to digital objects, so they're not spending nearly as much money on to produce. Like, I don't know if they would ever want to just have their product be available for free, even to people that were, like, super hardcore dedicated to play a bunch of time to get whatever it is for free. Maybe you're right. Maybe that is the best thing. Maybe they could move to that model eventually. I personally don't see it happening, but I think that there's a lot of wiggle room in between free and $4 a pack.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, or could there be some sort of a happy medium with that? You know, like we talked about last time where you were really excited for the movies and stuff to really expand Magic out of being sort of a weird niche thing that people sort of heard of. But if you play that, you're some sort of weirdo in your basement to, hey, this is a thing that people do. It's a sport, it's a game, whatever it is to you.
Oh, I do think if you're talking about like the idea of Magic as a brand, I do think there's a lot of room for Magic to create second game, like similar to Duelist at Planeswalker style. Maybe it's based in Magic rules, sort of, or whatever, but you can easily create like an offshoot or a spinoff that is free to play and has those elements to it, and maybe has a very restricted card pool to it. Maybe it's only core level cards, or, you know, whatever they want to do. I think that is completely possible. I think with the game Magic the Gathering as we know it today, I think that probably doesn't work on a free-to-play model, but the brand that Magic has to potentially go off of, they can do almost anything. They could make a MOBA tomorrow that's Magic the Gathering, and it would be insane. There'd be planeswalkers shooting people and big dragons fighting nickel boss. It would be crazy. Like, Magic has so much rich history and fantasy behind it that it could do all kinds of things if it wants to. But when you're talking about the actual core Magic the Gathering game, I think that's probably best as a not free-to-play model, if I had to guess literally from my 5 minutes of evaluation over the subject.
Yeah, I mean, but are you worried that, I'm kind of wondering if like some of the, and now that WotC is owned by Hasbro, that when we've had sort of some branch out Magic products in the past, like MTG Battlegrounds and we had MTG Tactics, that they were just enormous flops. Do you think there's too much history of these dying that they would never, that they're scared to go down that way again?
Well, that's no skin off of, I shouldn't say it's no skin off of, but I don't look at the flops of any licensed, you know, game as an issue for Magic. I mean, that's all some other development firm saying, hey, we want to license the rights to the Magic brand to create a game that is not Magic the Gathering. And ever since Chandelar or Microprose, like that actual like kind of Magic gameplay video game, everything else has been like not Magic. And I think that's why it hasn't quite been as successful, because the people that play Magic like playing Magic a lot. And if they didn't like playing Magic, they would play something else. Kind of related to what Conley was saying earlier. I think that, you know, I don't see free to play Magic, but I mean, you know, who knows? But I do see the great potential in kind of like a limited, like self-contained sets.
Like a living card game version. So almost like,
yeah, like a little bit. Like imagine like a self-contained, you know, cube where it was, maybe it's gold border or like it's got a different back or something like that on it. But, you know, basically it's like you can play this Magic experience and it's actual Magic the Gathering, but it's, you know, a self-contained set that plays with itself. You know, originally that's how the expansions were imagined, what it was, you know, it was Magic, but it was self-contained. It was its own, like Ice Age was going to be its own Magic the Gathering with its own thing on its own. But I mean, I think like Dual Decks is a great example of how you could have a one-stop purchase that is the Magic experience, but doesn't necessarily need to be all about buying all the booster packs and opening and creating a vast collection. You can actually just have this self-contained game experience.
Well, guys, this has been really interesting, but we need to pick me up. We've been knocking down MTGO. we've been kicking WotC just directly in the cojones. Something they did do that I'm assuming people are excited about is we now have what amounts to the full list that's on Gather for Born of the Gods. We're not going to plow through every card, but I would love Conley, you and Adam to, you know, give a couple picks. You know, four or five. It could be 10 cards. Ones that you either are really excited about. Ones that you think might be a sleeper hit, just or something that just has you excited. I have a couple picks from a kind of a tribal casual side, but I was gonna hand to you, Conley, from maybe the more hardcore.
You have to get one of yours
side.
First.
Oh, then for me,
pass the mic to me immediately.
God, there's two. So I guess the Whelming Wave for me, I think it's not often you get a tribal based board sweeper, and just the word whelming, it just sounds strange for me to hear. So Whelming Wave, it's going to be a rare Born of the Gods. It's a sorcery, 2BB. It's even fun to read. Return all creatures to their owner's hands, except for Krakens, or Krakens, however you want to say it, Leviathans, Octopuses, and Serpents. that is just plain fun and cool.
I heard you smirk a little bit when you said Octopuses.
Octopuses. Well, this is the classic thing when you are teaching medical students to document in we have electronic medical records now. That sometimes some words that are, when you spell them, when you pronounce them, they can be said differently. Where typically if you have like pus coming out of something, you should use the word purulent. But colloquially, a lot of us will use the word pussy. If you write that into a medical record and you go read it later,
looks great. I see.
So, and just for people who are curious how octopuses is spelled, it's O-C-T-O-P-U-S-E-S. So it's just the one S before the E.
Thank you.
So that was the one. That's the one I think I was the most excited about. And the number two is Chromanticore.
Chromanticore is a good man.
Yeah. So it's a Wooburg. So it's white, blue, black, red, and a green. It's an enchantment creature Manticore. That just still looks weird to me to see that on a card. It's an epic rare. It's a 4/4, has bestow for 2 colorless in Wooburg. It's flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, and lifelink. And of course, if you throw on a creature, it gets +4/+4 and all that other junk. The reason I'm excited about this card is we finally now have enough Manticores to make a Manticore tribal deck.
All right.
It'd be a horrible deck, but it's possible.
Chromanticore is definitely one of my goals in Limited, is to cast that thing, or actually to bestow it, but. Because that means you're playing 5 color, which is always sweet anyway, and it means you have an insane mythic win the game card in your deck.
And it's a mana core.
It's true. All right, so I will confess that this set, I know I expressed some distaste for it before, and it did not win me over. But,
oh, you didn't come around? It didn't?
No, it didn't. Oh, it's kind of a lame set. Kind of a lame set. But there are some individual cards that are still kind of neat. So I like the quirky flavor cards sometimes, and then I like, obviously, tournament-worthy cards. So I got to call out Igorge, just because it's sweet flavor.
Yeah, the idea of it is amazing.
Yeah, so it's just a black instant for a single black mana. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. If it's a Cyclops, you destroy it. So this card has called into question many magic riddles already. People are wondering if 2 Igorges kills a human and if 8 Igorges kills a spider, like whatever. Is it directly
related to the number of eyes?
The number of eyes you have. Yeah, exactly. So
imagine an Igorge storm.
Exactly. So unfortunately, Igorge is only killing Cyclops right now. Flavor text, by the way, one chance, one throw, one perfect hit. So you got to get that Cyclops in the eye. I don't know how you're throwing
it. Sounds like the tagline for a Field of Dreams.
Like this doesn't even make sense. It's a spear sticking out of the Cyclops' eye, right? So you're like, okay, he threw a spear, it hit the Cyclops in the eye, so it killed it. Well, how is a spear hitting anyone else in the eye and not killing it?
I guess if I had another eye, I could pull it out and I can stab him with it. But now the Cyclops is blind. And
whatever.
Unless he has a seeing eye, like Kobold or something with him, he's kind of in for a rough road.
Anyway, I think it's a little egregious, if you will. By the way, what do you guys think about the cards that are all the cards that only that hit Planeswalkers or call them out by name, I should say? How do you guys feel about that being like a thing now? Is that just like multiple cards can hit plane like for example, Faded Conflagration? That card doesn't even do something you're supposed to be able to do. It says deals 5 damage to target creature or planeswalker. Like, you don't even hit planeswalkers via the rules. You actually hit players, and then you redirect it to a planeswalker. So it literally is just, like, calling out, like, a rules shortcut on the card as rules text.
Or were they just worried that it'd be too strong if you could be doing 5 damage directly? I don't know. I'm thinking, like, mono red burn.
No.
So that'd be too strong.
No, first of all, that would not be too strong by any means. Four mana for 5 damage to face wouldn't be. But what I'm saying is they intended this design to hit planeswalkers and creatures. But in order to do so, they literally wrote rules that they wrote things that aren't true. Like, you can't, in the rules of Magic, you can't deal 5 damage to a planeswalker. You deal 5 damage to a player and then redirect that to a planeswalker. So this is the first time that you can actually just hit a planeswalker with damage. It's like, that's not a thing you're supposed to be able to do, technically.
I guess the only thing that would annoy me, but I to be honest, I think they make cards like this for players like me, like more casual players, where I might not even own a planeswalker, and they do tend to be incredibly strong on average. Where sometimes it gets annoying to get spanked repeatedly by people, you know, very strong control decks have a lot of planeswalkers. That's kind of nice. I don't know what you call it, poor design. It's a quick fix where I have a card that destroys a planeswalker in some way.
Sure.
But it annoys me, though, is now they're putting them, if they're putting them at rare and higher, it's like, well, I'm still not going to have the damn card. So it doesn't matter if I have a rare fix to a mythic rare, I may still not have that fix.
For what it's worth, I definitely think the wording on the card is good. I think that, like, it's to the point, players understand what it means. And from a designer standpoint, I think that's the correct move. It's just interesting to me that they're literally willing to kind of sidestep what they had established as their rules and write something different on a card as rules text, not as reminder text, and for it to actually work the way they intended and not the way that the rules technically would have it work. If that makes sense.
They were willing to
go out there on a limb, and because I mean, again, we were talking about Hearthstone earlier, and it does this sort of things a lot. It will just have text on a card that doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. Like, for example, if you have a guy, there was a unit that would give your guys +0/+1, right? And while he was in play, he gave all your guys +0/+1. Well, if you had a bunch of 2/2 or 2/1s in play, and then this guy out, all your things would be 2/2s. And if you were to cast, and this guy's an X1, then you were to cast a 1 damage to all units spell in Magic, you would go, okay, everything dies. You kill the guy who's pumping up everyone's toughness, and then all those 2/1s would then have 1 damage on them and they would die. In Hearthstone, however, the way it works is when you cast the 1 damage spell, it removes the temporary health granted by the health granter guy first. Mm-hmm. So you would end up with a dead 0/1 health granter and then a whole bunch of 2/1s still in play at their original form. So as a Magic player, when this first happened to me, I was like, what the heck just happened? Like, that's not what I intended, and he's got a bunch of 2/1s, I'm going to die, and that sucks. But as I played the game more, I realized that for most players, like, what just happened is pretty intuitive. They saw a bunch of 2s on their guys, and they were dealt 1 damage, so it went down to 1. Like, that makes sense to them. They don't understand the whole layers of, I had a Glorious Anthem that was then removed, and blah, blah, blah. So while this is a very small step towards that sort of same philosophy, I think it is a step towards that philosophy of kind of simpling Magic rules text to be more intuitive cool. and less okay. technical, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, if it would open up, because I'm assuming it's only continuing to get more daunting for new players.
Exactly, because there's just infinite rules, of course.
Even friends I had that played, say, like Revised Time and showing them some of the new cards, and they've never seen like a Planeswalker or equipment, they're just like, whoa, okay. I'm done. Thanks for showing me those new cards.
Just show them like Chromanticore. They'll understand that one really fast.
Yeah, they'd be like, bestow an enchantment creature? They'd just blow their minds. They're like, so how do I give a banding? Just tell me what gives my creatures banding? Because that was so much fun because you would basically just win because people would stop trying to do the math anymore.
You would cheese them out, Tom. You enjoy that?
Oh, God. It was so much fun. Just those, you know, Banalish heroes and Pegasus decks, which is things that would just be this. You guys ever see the Critters movies? You know, where all the little broly critter balls would mush together? That's in my mind what I imagine when you had like just this Banalish hero just horde going at him, but it's one creature. And yeah. God, wasn't there a merfolk like band? It was from Fallen Empires that had banding. It's like the Merfolk War Engine. God, what's the name of that card? I'm going to find it.
Goblin War Buggy? Was that it? No.
I don't. Oh. I will find it. Oh, God. And how can you not remember the Helm of Chatzuck, where I can just randomly give creatures banding until end of turn?
Helm of Chatzuck.
Yeah, did you never play with the Helm of Chatzuck?
I never played with Helm of Chatzuck, Tom. I mean, once or twice when I was a little lonely, I played with the Helm of Chatzuck.
Well, I mean, Adam
wants playing with the Helm of Chatzuck whenever there are women around.
Adam wants there to be more products for Magic players to play with themselves. So, I mean, it kind of fits in with that. I miss banding. Nobody actually understood it.
Nobody actually misses banding. They say they do. They say that banding was cool. They say that banding just got super wordy, but it's totally intuitive once you understand what it does. No, it's just weird and
it's like
poorly made.
They claim they like the Grateful Dead. Like, if the Grateful Dead showed up tomorrow to play a concert, would they attend? I'm not so sure, but they're willing to wear shirts everywhere saying that they love the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, but if I bust out a War Elephant deck, people are like, that guy's cool. I mean, he's got Arabian Nights.
You have to bust out Camel. You have to bust out Camel.
Camel doesn't have banding. Yeah, my War Elephant does it.
Doesn't he? He says him bands and with other creatures he bands with. Doesn't it say he and other creatures he bands with have protection from
deserts? Oh, you're right. I forgot about Camel.
Jeez, Tom.
I never
you
had
claim
camel.
You want banding back, and you don't even know about Camel.
And yeah, preventing all that desert damage, that actually was really good for a period of time when I was playing Magic. Because we all had a lot of deserts.
That's the saddest part.
And the Merfolk card thing, it was Trample. It wasn't banding that would...
Well, yeah, that's why the Camel was particularly awesome, is because he's a 0/1. So he's a 1-mana 0/1. So he literally has to band with something in order for it to matter.
Yeah, you can band
all creatures
him with
attacking... All creatures attacking in a band with Camel are immune to damage done by deserts. Yes.
I want to read you the Oracle text. It gets even better for this card. Banding. And now there's about 16 lines of text in parentheses. Any creatures with banding and up to one without can attack in a band. I like how they just call it a band now. Band. Bands are blocked as a group. If any creatures with banding you control are blocking or being blocked by a creature, nobody's listening at this point, but you divide that creature's combat damage, not its controller, among any of the creatures it's being blocked by or is blocking.
As long as Camel's attacking, prevent all damage deserts would deal to Camel and to creatures banded with Camel.
I think there should be more creatures in a band with Camel. In a band. There has to be a Magic-themed band out there that calls him named Camel at this point.
No. No, that doesn't exist.
No.
So have you ever banded
a Camel? It will after the podcast, but not now.
Yeah, there's somebody right now is starting up the Camel band, thanks to you. But
for me, there was always the most fun of, because they're both in the same set. Did you guys ever have the classic Camel banded with Abu Jafar?
Tom, I started playing in Mirrodin. So
are you familiar with Abu Jafar?
Familiar with Abu Jafar.
It's kind of too bad that they made him a human. I prefer the original, which was Summon Leper. I think that's more colorful.
It's not a thing. You can't just go offending people.
Okay, well, that's... Any more cards for you, Conley? We kind of mentioned the ones that you disliked. Are there any that you're excited about?
Eye Gouge. I was not upset about Eye Gouge.
You sounded upset. Adam, did Conley sound upset about Eye Gouge?
What?
Or Eye Gorge? Eye Gorge.
I said I like the cute...
I think Conley's... Yeah, exact words, but it was like really super awesome, flavorful.
Yeah. Then you went on for like 5 minutes about how it was dumb and...
No, I was just questioning how many Eye Gouges, like why it doesn't do that. Why two Eye Gouges doesn't kill a human.
If they're going to go all the way with the flavor, they should have just added that. Because seriously, you couldn't kill anything with more than four eyes at that point, which Unless you do something really weird.
If you're playing limited, you can kill a spider with eight of them. Even though
I could say you could draft enough of those.
Yeah. Is there any other cards for me? Probably not.
Wow. What card do you like? I like Eye Gouge.
I like Guild. I like Guild. Guild is interesting. You get a colorless non-creature artifact.
You like to get gold nuggets pooped out of the sky for you?
It doesn't actually make a lot of sense to me why you get the gold. Isn't it that you're like turning their creature into gold?
It says exile target creature. I guess theoretically you could be doing it to your.
No, I know, but it's exile target creature. Put a colorless artifact token named gold onto the battlefield. It has sacrifice this, add one mana, color your mana pool. However, if you turn their creature into gold, shouldn't they be getting the gold token?
Yeah, and I agree. I think this is even worse, is that when I'm gilding something, I'm losing gold because I have to take gold to gild that Pegasus.
Exactly. So this is like gild and then steal the gilded item, which is worse than just gilding. Why isn't that the name of the card? Gild and steal the gilded item.
It should be gilding, like gild, where you castrate horses. I think that would be a better...
I think this makes perfect flavor sense, because if you have the magical power to walk onto a battlefield and snap your finger and turn something into solid gold, are you really going to leave it there and just be like, here you go, buddy, sorry. Like, this is a reparation.
How are you carrying a gold horse? I think it's going to weigh like 50,000 pounds.
No, it actually just weighs one mana.
It's the easiest sacrifice. You just go up, you poke it, and a sun pops out.
Look, all things are done in the resource of mana in the magic world. It weighs one mana, and it is two manas high, and has a wingspan of four manas.
Yeah, it is where it, and I guess I have not looked at every single card in the full previous or any other cards that deal with gold.
This is the only gold token maker ever, and I believe it is the first non-creature token maker that it doesn't like repeat them. Like, I think you could do it with like Soul Foundry or something weird, but I think this is the first card to just put a non-creature token into play just straight up. Could be wrong.
Okay.
It is a very unique card, and it's a very strange one to give to black. Theoretically, mono black just gets stronger with this set, which is not good news for standards.
Yeah, well, it kind of seems like that came up a little bit for Grand Prix Vancouver, where kind of the mono color devotion decks has kind of steamrolled it.
Well, it's been that way since the Pro Tour, to be honest with you. Monocolor devotion decks have just been the best decks in the format, with like occasional little holes for Esper or blue white to fill. But it's almost exclusively been monocolor devotion decks, and with them getting like an Infest that scries and a Last Gasp that Maelstrom pulses and this Gold Maker and other cool things. I don't know. It just seems like their deck's probably even getting better after this, which is, it'll be interesting. We'll see. Oh, another card I really like, the Zombify that makes something indestructible. That is an interesting card. I don't really, it's kind of a weird one. Again, these are all like weird because like you get a gold token. It's the first time ever. I think this is the first thing to make something indestructible forever. Like, it's not an aura. It just, the creature just becomes indestructible as a state of this card, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's almost, I guess it's technically not an emblem, but it feels like an emblem.
Yeah, it's very much like an emblem. You can't do anything to get rid of it. Like, I assume, you basically, until that creature leaves play somehow, it is indestructible. So that's interesting.
I cannot wait to pant somebody in Commander. It's an instant too, right? I mean, it's just total gas.
Yeah, it's instant, and you get to scry too if it's during your turn. So you get your choice of ambushing them or scrying too. Which ain't that bad.
Yeah, I'm like 99% sure I already pre-ordered a foil version.
Nice. Yeah, to me, it's kind of weird. Like, if you ask me, I mean, I'm kind of excited to get more like Minotaurs, but it seems like in some ways there wasn't a whole ton of cards that really got me super excited. Is it? I mean, it feels like this sometimes happens when we're in the middle of the three sets. Where obviously the first one's exciting because we're now into a new block. The second one, they're adding some stuff, and then the third one usually, sort of ends the story and kind of shoots it off in a different direction. Like, do you guys feel like usually underwhelmed by the middle set, or?
No, I mean, I think recently I've been slightly underwhelmed, but not really. I mean, at least this is to me the most underwhelming set I've seen. But at the same time, the limited environment looks like it's going to be good, so that's exciting enough. By the way, Tom, as a tribal player, how do you feel about the Ragemonger, the Minotaur reducer, not reducing Mogi Slaughter, God of Slaughter?
Yeah, it's kind of annoying. You look at the damn card. I mean, it shows a huge, awesome Minotaur on there.
Definitely Minotaur.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like if they're going to put on eye gouge that, hey, this kills a Cyclops, put on my, is it Rage? Exactly. Put in there, it says, hey, reduces Minotaurs. Hey, it also reduces Mogus by two. Hey, nobody's still going to play with it, but give it to me. Give it to me. Or, hey, and it gives an ooze +1/+1. It'll put something just random tribal garbage on there. Six people will care about and they'll love you forever. And they'll get a foil Ragemonger for their set. And two is, unfortunately, there's not a ton of... So Ragemonger, if people aren't familiar, you probably aren't. It's a colorless black red. It's a Minotaur Shaman. It's an uncommon 2/3. Minotaur spells you cast costs black red less to cast. And this only affects colored mana, which... Unfortunately, there's not a whole... Basically, reduces a lot of Minotaurs by one. There's not very many red-black Minotaurs out there. Most of them are double red or single red.
Mogis would have been the second.
Yeah, which would have been awesome. Then you're plopping them out for... It feels like it was a missed. I don't know if they... Anyway, they felt it could have been too strong. I don't think it's a miss at all.
I mean, like... It's a god. It is not a Minotaur. It is Minotaur...
Look at his body. He's a Minotaur-shaped thing.
With a huge axe.
The Minotaurs are in the image of their god, but the god himself is not a Minotaur.
But he could be if he wanted to.
Prior to this.
He could be a legendary enchantment creature Minotaur god. And he could be the lead singer in Camel.
I guess the reason I'm bummed, I wouldn't actually be bummed about this interaction if it was that they had some better Minotaurs rocking around, but they don't. The Minotaur tribal deck that they're trying to push is very bad. It is awful. And I'm just hoping that even Mogis is not good. Is his name Mogis or Mogus? I don't know. I'm calling him Mogis.
I like Mogi. It sounds better.
It's a sweeter name. I've been calling him Fanatic of Mogis for forever. So
call him Mo. That's
so good. So in the developer chat that they had, I think yesterday, somebody asked a question, which was explicitly, will Minotaurs be good in Standard? I want my Minotaur Standard deck. And Tom was about to give an answer. Tom Lapilli, he was about to, but then he goes, and then he like kind of stopped himself and goes, actually, we can't say one way or another, because then we're effectively telling you whether it's a deck or not. Which leads me to believe that it's not a deck, because I think you'd be especially cognizant of potential future decks that are actually good right before an event where that would be highly useful information. So
I don't think it's a deck. I think it's a casual dream just to sell to casual players, like, hey, build this Minotaur deck, but which is fine, but they're pushing it awfully hard. They have like a rare in the first set that gives your Minotaurs +2/+0 and trample or whatever. They have this guy that reduces Minotaur's cost. Like when they have this many Minotaurs that theoretically should be working together to do something sweet, and then they have nothing sweet that could be done at the end of the tunnel, it's a little frustrating. But maybe, if casual players are enjoying themselves, I definitely played against a couple of Minotaur decks on Magic Online, for example. So if casual players are enjoying themselves and this is good enough, then I guess who am I to...
I'm holding out for like a Spirit of the Night type of effect that will let me sacrifice a bunch of that'll Minotaurs and pull out a Mogi. Be like, go here.
Also, real quick, if iGorge kills a Cyclops, why does Lost in a Labyrinth get to affect a Minotaur? Why couldn't they tack that on that line? Does not affect Minotaurs. Can't target a Minotaur. Target non-Minotaur creature. Oh, where's that flavor?
That would have been beautiful. Because it's such a poopy card anyways. Give it to me. Just be like...
Exactly. It's my point.
Target non-Minotaur creature.
If you're going to do it on eye gouge, just do it on Lost in the Labyrinth. That's all I'm saying.
See, there you could actually do the opposite. Where if you did Lost for this blue, it would be completely off color for flavor. It would be like, target non-Minotaur creature gets -3/-0 until end of turn. Target Minotaur gets +3/+0. Because, the Minotaur is in the maze. It's got the advantage.
Look at Tom. Tom's a designer. Pick him up, Wizards.
Yeah.
You need him in.
I promise I can beat Gavin. I'll do a better job.
You hear that, Gavin? Challenge.
Yep, challenge. I can make a better Lost in the Labyrinth than you do. Oh, they don't tell me who made this one. That's too bad. I can't call him out.
So just one more aside about the whole Minotaur standard deck, which is, so there is a whole nother set coming, and Mark Rosewater is very clear, there are more Minotaurs coming, but more importantly, all of these, yeah, shocker. but all of these cards are basically have, you know, a year to year and a half left in standard. So, you know, they could come out with a third set, and then there's a new core set where they could have a whole bunch of, you know, Minotaurs in there too. You know, it could be like a tribal-ish core set with like more red and black Minotaurs. So, you know, there is time, even if it's not even in the next set, for enough Minotaurs to appear.
It makes me want like the third Unhinged set. It makes me want Unashamed or whatever it is. Unbanded, you know, something like
that. I think all this Minotaur talk and the Unshamed set is getting Mogi's pretty horny.
Saved that the entire pocket. He's like, I'm playing the horn card. I'm proud of you, though. I'm proud of you.
I got a slow clap. I'll take it.
All right. Well, guys, I know we're actually approaching an hour, but to kind of wrap it up, Conley, I wanted to see, did you want to share anything from, you played a couple of Grand Prix, though,
recently. I did. I played Grand Prix Sacramento, which was limited, Theros limited. I played some Minotaurs. And one of my decks had two Fanatic of Mogi in it.
Oh, I like it.
I actually ended up taking 11th there. I lost my winning in to top 8, but it was like a 1900 place person tournament, so 11th is certainly solid enough. I'll take it. I needed the pro points. Then I went to Vancouver via Seattle. I flew up to Seattle, drove up, and my tournament did not go nearly as well as I would have liked. But that's Magic for you. I played a red-white devotion with main deck Elspeth. And, yeah, I don't know. Just didn't have particularly great draws, particularly great matchups. Mulligan, some bunch. Just a bunch of little things that just cost me. Nothing too noteworthy. But, yeah.
You also lost your car, like, in the airport. I read on your Twitter feed. It took you, 2 hours.
It was awful. I basically got back. Denver was covered in this ridiculously thick fog. I don't know what happened when I was gone, but it was like Santa Claus and all of his reindeer just farted over Denver. Then
it sounds more like sharded maybe at that point, but
it's what it looked like. So anyway, it's covered in fog, and I go out to like get my car out of the parking lot, and I hadn't like written down my little you know, I'm in section 9A or whatever, because I always park in roughly the same spot, so I figured it'd be easy to find my car. So I like went out and was wandering and spamming the panic button on my keys and pushing the unlock button, and like was walking, you know, 75 to 80% of the way down a row and clicking the panic button, and nothing would happen. So I would turn around, and I literally ended up walking down like letter by letter down every single row looking for my car A through Z, and like could not find it anywhere. It turns out eventually that it was just like tucked away, kind of hidden behind two cars. You couldn't really see it at all. And my panic button and my keys just had just not stopped working, basically. So I had been within like maybe 20 feet of my car, not seen it, and not had, the panic button didn't go off or anything like that. So I just had no idea that it was there. So I literally spent like multiple hours, you know, going places where like I'd already been by my car and ruled it out as a place where my car wasn't. So, and it was freezing out too. So I ended up getting pretty sick as a result of all that, and I missed work yesterday. It was pretty crappy, but I found my car.
it's work you can't tell us about, though, so yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I can't tell you about that. But I fixed my keys, and we're good to go. And I don't have any more tournaments till the Pro Tour, which we officially announced Team TCG Player is my team, officially sponsored.
Oh, so it is from... So. I'm assuming by the website, TCG Player?
Yes, TCGPlayer.com, which I write for. You should be going and checking that site out anyway.
And I talked with Anna about this. What was all the weirdness? I think it was the Grand Prix Sacramento about the whole thing. There was an article about teams.
Oh, yeah. So you guys didn't know about this. All right, so basically what ended up happening, I don't want to go into any drama, basically, but the team formerly known as Star City Games, I believe Star City Games Black even at times, they were not able to reach an agreement with Star City, and they opted to not be sponsored by Star City Games this time. So the team is being sponsored by Channel Fireball. A lot of people were confused about this. They thought that like they'd be working with the current team Fireball, etc. That is not the case. There will be two distinct team Channel Fireballs working separately, just as they always have. Basically, the only thing that changed was who was sponsoring them. So they'll be sponsored by Channel Fireball. I believe they are working on finding a new name via...
Are you saying they're separate but equal?
Yes. I believe they're looking for a new name via audience participation. So I don't know when those polls end, but they were having people go on their Facebook page and things on Channel Fireball's Facebook page and kind of put in suggestions for new names for the new team and things like that. I, as I just mentioned, will not be working with Channel Fireball, either of those teams, this particular Pro Tour, branching out, doing my own thing. I'll be a part of Team TCG Player. And that consists of people like me, Craig Wesco, Harry Corvese, Ari Lax, Andrew Shrout, Chris Fennell, multiple other five or six other people that I guess I could go out through naming, but isn't necessarily that important. We'll have a team website with kind of bios and stuff like that up eventually. So I'm sure I'll plug that on here. And, yeah, we're just gonna be testing quite a bit still for the Pro Tour. It's coming up in 3 or 4 weeks. And we still have a banned and restricted announcement that has not been made yet that should be being made on Monday that will kind of steer our Pro Tour. So we're waiting on that.
All right. So the big kerfluffle was this team that was formerly with Starseed Games was now basically wearing the gang colors of Channel Fireball, and people were
correct.
Confused.
There's obviously there's some like, you know, political implications there or whatever regarding the two sites and things of that nature. So people... You know, it's a bigger deal than me just breezing by it. But in terms of what I'm willing to talk about and what
I mean, like that's what I wanted was like the summary. Because looking through that page, I just didn't quite understand what everybody was so worked up about. Apparently,
yeah. Basically, Star City Games will not have a team sponsored in the Pro Tour this year. Channel Fireball will have two. TCG Player will have one, and those are kind of like the big sites. And then there's other teams like Mana Deprived will have a team. Face to Face Games has a team. A bunch of smaller teams and whatnot, but kind of the big teams, Star City Games moving over to Channel Fireball is a pretty big deal since those are the two super teams and now they're working for one sponsor.
And I guess for me being a casual player, what's the point of a team? Is it just like is it just for like promotion for these sites, or is there actually?
It's a couple of things. So what the team gets is obviously sponsorship. So they get money from these sites, potential accommodations, cards if they need to borrow them. Each site or each sponsor will have different deals with the people they're dealing with. So obviously any particular details are going to be different. The site gets advertising from the players because those players are wearing their shirts, which is always good during feature matches and photo shoots and deck techs, et cetera. In addition, the teams kind of give people a larger picture group to kind of root for. So when I'm rooting for Team TCG Player, any of the 10 players do well, and I'm pretty happy with myself or whatever. So then I can go to that team's website, check out how they're doing, get particular information about their members, things of that nature. So it just kind of gives you this more formal sort of feel. Like if you're rooting for any one player at a Pro Tour, there's a good chance that player might just like 0-2 drop or whatever. Like it's magic. There's variance. But when you kind of root for a team, it's kind of like the same thing as like rooting for a team in the NFL. Now there, you know, you have a 1 out of 36 chance for that team to do well, as opposed to a 1 out of 500 where you're kind of infinitesimal. But if you're rooting for like an organization or whatever, any of their members do well and you're pretty happy. So it's kind of gives you a bigger picture thing to kind of root for.
Okay, that makes more sense to me, especially if you were, you know, kind of more casually following that coverage. That would be from like, oh, hey, I lost my Conley's gone, but now I can look for somebody else that I know from TCG Player and follow them.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, the for the players, it's kind of nice just to have, you know, this like central name and central identity. It's pretty beneficial to both parties, I would say. So it's not like, you know, irrelevant, and it's not, you know, the end all be all, but it is a thing that happens that kind of keeps pro players afloat and gives them a little bit of extra pocket cash, which is never a bad thing.
No, do you guys have each other's back like outside of like the game hall? Like, you know, if there's like there's a knife fight going on in the parking lot and say a team TCG player is involved, are you guys all going to jump in? You know, I'm thinking like Anchorman style.
It's kind of funny you ask that because there is that for some teams. It kind of all depends on the attitude of the team. Like for my particular team, Team TCG player this time, we've been Skype calling each other week after week for the last couple months. A lot of us knew each other before being on the team. Other people have worked together before, et cetera. So we're pretty good in the camaraderie field. Channel Fireball was very much the same. We're basically just a group of friends that just happen to play Magic and be good at it. So we kind of formed Fireball. But then I'm sure there are other teams that are much more businessy in terms of their interactions. They're there to win this particular Pro Tour and they're not there to make friends sort of thing. I personally would not like to do business like that, but I can understand if other people would. So, you know, when you say, would people, you know, fight outside of the tournament hall or whatever, I think my team would. They would have my back or whatever in this particular case because we're all friends. But there are certainly some teams that would be like, nope, we're going to go play our matches.
Stab them. I might win.
It really is up to that individual team and the people on it, like the attitude and the personality of the team. It's really going to be, you know, different from team to team. But in any team that I've been on, we're definitely more friends than we are business partners.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you. And Adam, is there anything that you wanted to kind of mention that has you particularly excited at all?
Yeah. Apparently not, because we're out of time.
Well, we got time. I mean, I've given you, you got your window. It's only 15 seconds, but you have your window. I'm just kidding. You have as much time as you want.
No, it's just, you know, coming from a marketing background, you know, for my day job, it's just really fascinating how differently I perceived like the whole team shift deal. Like it didn't really surprise me. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like it just seemed like a very natural, logical thing to happen. And just watching everybody else like send me PMs and freak out about it was just hilarious.
Well, I mean, I think that part of that is that people view Star City Games as kind of like this juggernaut in the MTG community. Like they are the biggest store. They have the most writers, the most articles and everything. So for them not to be able to reach an agreement with that team might have kind of caught people off guard, just because it's like, well, you have infinite money, you have infinite resources. Why, you know, these are the best players in the world. You're talking about John Finkel and Huey and, you know, even Kai. These are people that, you know, you would actively want to sponsor if you're a sponsor. So they're like, you know, what the hell happened? And that's really between Star City Games and that team to know what happened. But I can understand people being a little like, you know, I don't understand this because it doesn't make, it makes sense, you know, that a team would move to a different place. It doesn't necessarily make sense that Team Star City Games would leave Star City Games and go to somewhere else. So I guess that's kind of like the thing where people are like, you know, what's going on here?
Too, it probably would be a really interesting story that we'll never hear, kind of what happened with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Adam's right, though. Like, this is, like, business decisions are made every single day in every single business, and this is just one of those. And, you know, at the end of the day, if something's not making you money, or it is making you money, or it's the wrong move for your company, you just got to, you know, make whatever decision moves you forward.
All right, well, Adam, actually, from your side, I was going to jump a little bit back to the Born of the Gods. Are there any Commander cards coming out of Born of the Gods that have you super excited?
I mean, the Fateful Return, the indestructible Raise Dead instant speed that Conley brought up. I mean, I think that's probably like the, I think VDM previewed that. I mean, it's just one of like the really sweet cards. I'm just going to like, you just know you're going to get pantsed by it, or you're going to pants someone with it at some point. There is one card, and I think maybe Conley, you might appreciate this a little bit. You know, I have a Pauper Cube, so I really pour over the commons and I really try to find if there's anything that I should consider or revisit or rebuild. I mean, it's the whole developer approach to the cube, but there was one card that really stood out to me, and that was Crypsis, which is one in a blue for an instant and target creature you control. It's either target creature you control or just target creature gains protection from creatures your opponents control until end of turn. Untap it. And The little piece that jumps out on there is protection from creatures, your opponent's creatures, because it just seems like such a white thing. You know, Benevolent Chaplain, a bunch of the protection effects have traditionally just been in white. But between Trunane Nemesis and now Crypsis, you know, it feels like the color that already could do pretty much anything is now getting more protection effects instead of Hexproof. It just really stood out as just a very strange type of effect, particularly a common in a color I wouldn't necessarily expect it in.
I would say especially so, considering that Holy Mantle is a very recent print and was in white. And it gives it's +2/+2, and your creature gains protection from creatures. So
it's been like two or three core sets now, yeah.
Yeah, so the fact that that's recent, but yeah, that you're right, and this is a creature you control only. But yeah, it is this. I definitely talked about this in the office, just about how, you know, blue is getting this, and it was kind of strange to see. It'll be interesting to see if this is a thing that could, because True Nemesis, I agree that that is another protection card, but at the same time, I don't know if it like falls into the design constraints that modern design does. Like, I don't know if they value that type of stuff the same, because it can't see standard play or modern play. So I don't know if it's kind of a notch either direction, you know, saying that blue will continue to get this effect or not. But paying attention to this kind of stuff in the next couple sets to see if blue gets this thing as a, I mean, this is like common, right? Like, you're talking about.
Yeah, that's why it jumped out at me so much, is it showing up as a common. It just, yeah. You know, it's just like alarm bells started going off.
Definitely weird, and definitely something to watch out for, and seems like a super sweet cube card just because it's like very, very tricky.
And it also can kind of do a surprise on tap, so it does have I guess that's kind of a blue flavor to it, but still, yeah, it's still weird to see that protection with it.
Yeah, it I mean, basically just win target combat.
Yeah, exactly. It is nice to know that your bestow creatures do not fall off when you use this. That is something that God's Willing occasionally does that this will never run into the problem of.
All right, guys. Well, anything else? Otherwise, I will briefly mention the research article that I would really like everybody to read as homework for the next podcast. And this includes my co-hosts.
I feel like this is going to be almost nothing to do with research and everything to do with something stupid.
Oh, no, it's an actual published article in the Frontiers of Zoology. It just came out their most recent one. Did you guys hear about this? That this was an article was published. We have the most recent article, but basically just the title of the article is Dogs Are Sensitive to Small Variations of the Earth's Magnetic Field. But how they ascertain this is they searched for signs of magnetic alignment in dogs. To do that, they measured the direction of the body axis in 70 dogs of 37 breeds during defecation and urination. And they found that dogs would preferentially align themselves with the north-south magnetic field when pooping and peeing. Somebody got money to do this.
What are the implications of this?
Basically, there are very few mammal species that seem to be able to what amounts to detect and be sensitive to magnetic fields. A lot of fish, a lot of other species do, but there's very few mammals. I mean, like supposedly birds, there's been some birds that they may actually be able to visualize magnetic fields that dealt with migration or whatever reason they would have that, but they haven't really had anything sort of higher on the chart than a bird that had this. So saying that dogs apparently can sense magnetic field is, in their world, a big thing, a big deal. So the question is, you know, in the 10,000 years in the future when our poles switch, I mean, are dogs just going to be just crapping randomly? Are they going to roll over on their backs to crap? I mean,
that's the big question. That's the big question. That's what you brought this on the podcast for all of our listeners to contemplate and think over really hard and come back with an answer to is, in 10,000 years, will dogs be crapping in random directions?
Or in the movie The Core, you know, where the middle of the planet stops spinning and all the magnetic fields go away. Same thing here. The dogs wouldn't know how to poop. They would just all die because they wouldn't
poop. Tom, are you familiar with the term abuse of power?
I actually shared this article with people at a clinic. I'm like, you should read this. This is huge.
I can imagine now, Tom, is somebody setting up a giant room with that has like electromagnets built into it. So and they put a dog in, as soon as the dog starts to go to the bathroom,
whip that thing around.
The electromagnetics, you know, or you know, orthogonal to the position the dog's in, and as soon as the dog turns, like turn it again, and just like keep making the dog not able to poop in alignment with the magnets.
Yeah, you can make like designs. Yeah, that'll happen at some point. So I will put a link to this article in the show notes. It's interesting to read because it actually was a fairly well done study. But it's the most ridiculous topic you'll find in a long time.
All right.
And if anybody actually does read it, I would say go to Figure 5. It is probably one of the most funny pictures I have seen in a research article. It showed how they did the axis of the dog's trunk. So basically, it's just a picture of a dog pooping with like this overlaid compass on it with an arrow pointing from its head. Here, for you guys, Adam and Conley, I will throw it into the
chat. No, I refuse. I will not click this link.
There you go. It's a PDF.
I'm going to take the higher road.
Go to page 11 of 12.
Stare at this art on Cryptsis.
Figure 5.
Target creature you control gains protection from creatures your opponent.
That's really interesting.
Until end of turn. Untap it.
All right, guys. Conley, Adam, any things you wanted to share before we and maybe share your Twitter handles, and then we will wrap this up. So just so you can mull over dogs sensing magnetic fields.
All right.
What, they're colorblind? That makes no sense.
My Twitter handle is Conley81. You will see no pictures of dogs pooping. And yeah. Oh, I also have a little thing. If I hit 15K viewers, I'm going to be doing or 15K followers, I'm going to be doing a 15-hour magic online stream, which will probably kill me, but I'll figure out a way to do it.
Well, 15 hours. You can do that easy.
Well, easy if I had no other things going on in my life. I agree. There are 15 hours in a day that I could do this in, but it involves giving up a lot of other things that I would be doing in that time.
Yeah, if you want to come babysit, I'll do the 15 hours for you.
All right, I'm sure people will watch that. Me babysitting, not you playing magic.
You'd be like, oh my god, why won't you wear pants? Please put your socks on. All right, so
go ahead. My Twitter handle is the_Stibs, STYBS. And you'll also not find pooping dog pictures on my account.
That's right. Me and Adam know how to hold it down. We have to reel Tom in every once in a while from his dog defecation.
Yeah, it's interesting. They even break it down by species.
No, Tom, no one cares about the dogs pooping and species with the compasses and the magnetic fields.
It's just interesting. The world around you, Conley, we don't know much about it. It opens your eyes.
That is true, but there are also a lot of interesting things I could show you that don't involve dog poop.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot of neat stuff out there, but this one I think is...
That's true. So you will concede the fact that the world does not revolve around dog poop.
I will give you that one. I will meet you halfway on that point. Okay, well,
Tom, Conley... Can give you your Twitter information? You haven't done it yet.
Yeah, but I'm going to do it right now at the end of the show. Mine is PSG Reader, so PSG READER. Yeah, and I'm trying to think. Yeah, just tweet. Because if I give out emails, I get really weird emails. I found that out for Monday Night Magic. You get just bizarre stuff sent to you, and I'm going to try to cut that off at the knees a little bit.
That's basically what mode I'm in. There's too many social medias out there for people to need to know your email these days anyway.
So, and at least with, I guess, Twitter, is like, as long as if you're friends with each other or you follow each other, then you can do direct messages. Is that how it works?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So, yeah.
Send also, I'm gonna be the bookkeeper here and say that we're relatively new at this thing still. So, apologies for we didn't get anything done last week because...
Well, Adam was in the process of dying.
Yeah, Adam was dead. I was traveling. And I got Tom better. He did get better.
Well, I'm glad, yeah, because you felt you really bad last week.
Also, Tom's shows in the past have been much more structured than this. So if there's any interest in that sort of thing, let us know in comments or whatever. Since right now we're basically just shooting the shit. And by that, I mean I'm talking a bunch. Yeah. So,
I should say a big thank you to Gathering Magic for putting the show up. So thank you, Adam.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're gonna get that iTunes feed fixed, hopefully this week.
Mm. Yep, I need to do that. Yeah, the whole infant getting influenza has eliminated some of my extra free time doing laundry. Well, so guys,
weren't to get immunization shots.
What are you getting? The problem is most of the flu immunizations, the effect largely wears out after about 3 months.
Oh, really?
So depending on when you get your immunization, sometimes, because a lot of times in healthcare, you're forced to get them really early. So a lot of times by January, if there's a late surge, like here in Minnesota, there's been this really late surge of influenza. Sometimes you're kind of hosed, as you actually may not have the protection anymore. And that's too if they got the right mix in the vaccination.
See, Tom, you were able to teach us something interesting without mentioning dog poop.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, so influenza A is no fun. So guys, thank you very much again. Yeah, we're getting back into this. You know, this MTG potpourri, it's going to be a little more free form, but
I feel like until we change our name, we're not going to be taken seriously.
Well, give me a better name. So listeners, tweet a better name. I asked these two and they didn't give me any ideas. So I said it's MTG potpourri until proven otherwise. And I agree. It's not the best name. It's the one that I had when I came up with the show. So guys, thank you very much. Adam, Conley, thank you again for joining me and have a good night, everybody.
Good night.